This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 712, brought to you by Daybreak, the only podcast left. Whether you're a fan of the show Daybreak, or you love learning how to survive in a teen-filled post-apocalyptic world, you're going to need to subscribe to Netflix's first fictional podcast. And Harry's. For $5 off any Harry's shave set, visit harrys.com/ifanboy. iFanboy listeners, just like you.
Pretty queen of New York City. When the band finished playing, they held out for more. Sinatra was swinging, all the jokes they were singing. We kissed on the corner, then danced through the night. The boys of the NYPD choir were singing, go away, bye. And the bells were ringing out for Christmas.
Hello. Welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 712. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and sitting in for Josh Flanagan is former iFanboy columnist Jim Rychowski.
Sorry, everybody. No living person remembers that I worked on this site.
This is our last regular show of the year, and Jim is returning to us after many years. He was one of our featured columnists back when we did a daily website. Jim, yep. I think you're one of the most natural-born columnists I've ever met. You were terrific at your job.
You and the four people who clicked on my articles seem to agree with you. You seem to agree with you. This is off to a great start.
So thanks for filling in the last second as Josh.
I'm happy to do it.
He was trying to return from a work trip. Of course, we see that half the United States is under some sort of giant storm. And yes. he's in some sort of planes, trains, and automobile situation.
I'm sorry to hear it. Thoughts and prayers.
He didn't make it home.
Good Lord.
So he was very sad to miss the final show of the year, but he will be back in January. He'll be back next week with our all-media show, but he'll be back in January for the regular episode.
It's a pleasure to be back, and this is an interesting experiment for me. This was an irresistible opportunity because, as you alluded to earlier, we ended doing columns about 6 years ago, and about 5.9 years ago, I immediately walked over and subscribed to Marvel Unlimited, which means I've been 6 months behind at least on comic books for 6 years now.
Oops.
And then you said, the Wednesday Warriors need you. So I dipped my toe back in and I thought this is going to be an amazing experiment because I'm going to read whatever's out. I'm going to pick up whatever issue is on the shelf, like I did when I was 11 years old. And we're going to see how this goes.
Interesting. Okay.
I learned a lot.
So let's get to it. We are iFanboy. Every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks their favorite book. We call that the pick of the week. We'll talk about that book, other books from the week. We'll do the patron pick. We'll definitely do some listener mail. This show might go a little long. We want to make sure we get everything in before we're done for the year. Mostly, we're going to have a good time. You, me, Jim, everyone. It's a good time. Spoiler warning, review show. There'll be spoilers. Use your head. And I had the final pick of 2019, and it was Superman Up in the Sky, number 6. The other irony of Jim, of you being on the show, is you are a noted Superman hater.
I'm glad that you brought that up.
So this is the final issue of Tom King and Andy Kubert's Superman miniseries that was originally found in Walmarts and then eventually made its way to comic stores. This book and the next book we're going to talk about were both Walmart books. It's interesting that I guess that because A, they're out of continuity, and B, that they were originally in Walmart, I don't know that these books, I don't know how they're selling. I don't pay attention to that anymore. I don't know what the zeitgeist is for these books, but it doesn't seem like they're being talked about all that much. To me, this is the best Superman book in a year of great Superman books that came out. And Batman Universe, which we'll talk about, is the best Batman book. Hopefully people are checking this miniseries out. This is the final issue, as I said. The story of this book has been a young girl was kidnapped by aliens, and Superman decided to go save her, and he has been on an adventure in space, going through different alien planets, meeting different people with Darkseid and other aliens that are new, as he attempts to find this little girl. And what this miniseries has really been about is, who is Superman, and why is he important? And this issue is the final wrap-up, in which Superman finally finds the little girl. The first half of the issue is him escaping the aliens that captured him in the last issue, while we also see on Earth the aliens are invading, and all the Justice League and everybody's fighting them off. And we have Superman's encounter with those aliens. And the second half, as he's free, is him finding the little girl, flying home through space, having little adventures with her. And as she, as anyone who's been around a toddler knows, peppers him with questions the entire time. Which is, I think, a terrific device for Superman to sort of give his philosophy on life and heroism and everything.
And whether he is propelled by something that shoots out of his butt.
Right. So yeah. As a Superman fan and lover, this issue was very emotional. You know, people have been quoting it to us on social media, but the scene where he says, "Winning fights don't make me happy," was terrific. Mm-hmm. And then there was one scene where they had stopped to help an alien, and she's like, "Why did we stop?" Because he needed help, and there's a whole exchange there, and that one got to me, especially in these day and ages. Someone needs help, you help them, is basically the message here. And the page with Batman about why Batman would win in a fight, because Batman needs it more than he does.
That's right.
That was terrific.
And he's Batman. Yeah.
Everything about this really got me. It's really unfortunate that between this and Batman Universe that DC didn't get these collections out for the holidays, because I can think of at least three people I would have bought both of these collections for.
Yeah.
Because they really do sum up the characters really well. The collections aren't coming out until, I believe, April, or it could be March. And when those do come out,
that's too bad.
I'll be buying them. This is a book you can hand someone and say, "Here's Superman." You know, a Variety article this week got a lot of play about how Warner Bros. Doesn't know what the hell to do with Superman.
Yeah.
And they've already hired Tom King to write the new Gods movie. It just seems to me they could also slide him on over to Superman as well, because this is Superman in the modern world, and it doesn't come off as hokey. It makes total sense. It's downright inspiring. To me, it's not that difficult to figure out why Superman's so great, and this issue really personifies it.
Yes, and not only could you hand somebody this book and say, "This is what Superman is," you could hand somebody, I speak from personal experience, this issue and say to them, "This is what Superman is." Because, you know, DC doesn't do the recap page and all that stuff. But I picked up the last issue of a series. Mm-hmm. And within two pages, I knew everything that was going on. I understood the stakes. It just perfectly, the old Jim Shooter thing that every comic is somebody's first comic.
Right.
This would be a perfect example of that. And like you said, one of the many ways that I abused your website years ago was to write a column while you were sleeping and post it on the internet that said, I don't get Superman. He's one of my least favorite characters in fiction. Whatever people like about him has never clicked for me, but I read this and Tom King does what he does, and it all just kind of fell into place. If you have anything in your heart for the Chris Evans Captain America, you get this.
We've been saying for years that they hold the same place in their respective universes. They're both the emotional heart, Captain America and Superman.
Yeah.
That's what you get here. And this is the thesis statement issue. I mean, we've been dealing with aspects of this throughout the miniseries, but this is the stamp through the conversation with the little girl about what Tom King sees Superman as being. And we'd be remiss without mentioning Andy Kubert, who is...
Oh, sure.
He's a very stylized artist. I don't know why Superman has these giant cuffs on his arms. He's from that old Marvel school. He's incredibly dynamic. He excels with these space creatures and with these alien worlds. There's a part where they're eating. They stop for food at some alien, you know, truck stop diner. And the food they're eating looks so disgusting, but in the best possible way. And it just looks terrific. You know, this is a great-looking book. Tom King has said he purchased all the pages from this from Andy Kubert, so he would have them because he loved them so much.
I can't blame him.
Yeah, it's a good-looking book. He's my favorite of the Kubert brothers. I like Adam as well, but Andy's my favorite. It's one of those tour de force comic books. You know, it feels like a comic book. There's big aliens, there's crazy robots, there's small personal moments. It's terrific.
Yeah. And one of the things that always hung me up about The Boy in Blue was that he was invulnerable and finding a way to, you know, hinder him or finding an obstacle for him to overcome seemed like a contrivance. But this really drove home, like, what's important about Superman is that he's not going to give up, even if he's chained. You know, he can haul a star with these chains.
The strongest metal in the universe.
That's right.
Yeah.
But there's a little girl who needs him. Yeah. And so whatever he needs to do to overcome it, he will do it to overcome it.
The little girl who needs him in his... basically praying to him to save her. It got me. This issue really got me. Tom King's done a lot of Batman writing, so I didn't know what to make of the Superman when this was first announced, and he can clearly take that book as well, although it's good. He doesn't need to at the moment. It's doing very well.
I noticed that Batman never quit either.
Well, he does quit, but he has different limitations. Let's talk about Batman. Batman Universe 6. This was the series that had three picks of the week. It had a fourth that was basically a coin flip that it lost. This was probably my favorite book of the year. And this is Brian Bendis and Nick Darrington doing, much like Up in the Sky and Out of Continuity, what is Batman's story, a Batman thesis statement. And so the story of this has been Vandal Savage and Batman locked in a race to acquire this mysterious item, which turned out to be, as revealed in the last issue, the original White Lantern ring. And Batman was zapped into it at the end of the last issue. This issue is Batman inside of the White Lantern ring and then eventually duking it out with Vandal Savage throughout DC Comics history. And seeing an alternate version where he is not Batman. This is also the thesis statement at the end of this. It ends very similarly on a very similar note to Superman Up in the Sky. This has been great to me. Nick Darrington has been the star of the book. This book is beautiful. Seeing him getting to draw basically the entire DC universe has been a treat. And Bendis is, again, we haven't talked about this also, in addition to your hatred of Superman, on the other side of the coin was your absolute love of Bendis, who is now in charge of DC.
Can you imagine what it felt like that day? I opened up my Twitter and Brian Bendis said, "I'm abruptly leaving Jessica Jones to write Superman." There were black cloths hung over the mirrors in my house for 6 months. And I still have not indulged, although I've set them aside on a library queue. And one day I'm going to get to them. But yeah, this was another one where I went in blind and I was right away, you know, on page one, Batman kind of looks at the camera and goes, "Here's what I'm doing and here's what's happened and here we," and like immediately I got it, and it was a satisfying chunk, as Heidi McDonald used to say. And there was one time when I thought Vandal Savage doesn't talk like that,
right?
But that's classic Bendis. He didn't disappoint. Like, Bendis is the reason I am your problem now.
Right.
I had been out of comics for 10 years when somebody told me about Alias, and the rest is history. So yeah, this was nice. It encouraged me to go ahead and take a chance on the Superman book.
Well, I think you should definitely do that, but I think you should definitely read this whole miniseries, because this has been terrific. And of course, everyone assumed when Bendis was announced as moving to DC, he would be doing Batman. He went to Superman instead. It turns out to be a very natural fit. Of course, he also writes a really terrific Batman, but his Batman is a lot less grim and gritty, but never out of character. This was an incredibly fun read. It was basically a team-up book. Every issue was teaming up with a different hero. And I love his team-ups with all the different characters. I love Vandal Savage ending up back in the Old West here, so closing the loop on the Jonah Hex part of the storyline, because the original thing came from Jonah Hex. A terrific full-page shot from Nick Darrington of Batman and all his villains and his friends that I've already saved to make my iPad wallpaper after the holidays is over. This was just an incredible book. Incredibly fun romp. Again, if you at all were thinking about checking these books out or didn't do it because they were Walmart books or whatever, or not in continuity, these are terrific books that you can hand someone and say, "This is Superman, this is Batman." And they were a lot of fun.
Do people, I mean, I guess people really care about continuity a lot, but I find that I almost prefer them to be out of continuity, if that makes sense.
If you look at the seminal stories throughout comics, the ones that stand the test of time, that people refer to as classics, they're often not. They are, sometimes are, but they often not, because that means you don't have the restrictions and things like that.
Yeah.
So when you agreed to come on the show, I thought, oh, great, because I'll be able to talk X-Men Jim.
Do the Spider-Man and Marvel, recruit the Marvel zombie.
So you being behind haven't really been involved with the new X-Men relaunch led by Jonathan Hickman.
I know nothing about this except for the fact that my comic shop manager handed me a packet of seeds one day that said they were Krakoa seeds, and it was some kind of
weird
marketing ploy that is as inscrutable to me as many of the events contained in this volume.
We had three issues this week. We had Marauders, New Issue of Excalibur, and X-Men. I thought X-Men was the most fun. This is somehow still being drawn by Neil Francis Yu. I thought we've got to be at the edge of that, or getting there close. So I'm curious what you thought of this issue, not having read any of the Hickman sort of relaunch. Although there is, I guess there isn't a recap. He just does like a very short.
He kind of works in those little text design pages that he is so notorious for or famous for. This one, first of all, I enjoyed it. It was a good book. It was well written. He sometimes with Secret War and Fantastic Four, no, not Fantastic Four, more the Avengers, left me in the dust a little bit. Mm-hmm. I was always kind of running behind those books trying to catch up, but there wasn't that much of that here. This is what I mean about I almost prefer they wouldn't stick to continuity so much, because I've been reading all the X-Men books in my time, 6 months in the past, religiously, and everything I'm looking at is like, why? Why are we friends with the White Queen? Where did Cyclops come from?
You've missed a lot. You're like Rip Van Winkle.
Yeah.
You woke up after a short coma, and now you're reading comics again.
Right. And like inevitably, like the last one I read was issue number 9, and then I looked 2 weeks later, and they're on issue number 3 somehow. Like with all the renumbering, I never know what's going on. But I mean, I loved the villains very much.
They were great. This story was about a bunch of older women. I don't want to say elderly, although one of them is in her 80s. So a bunch of 60s to 80-year-old women, the horticulture, H-O-R-D-E, they're all like radical botanists and geneticists who managed to invade Krakoa to steal their special flowers and things. And there's a whole – they have a whole thing going on. But it was very funny to see the X-Men in this issue try to face off against a bunch of elderly women.
And not do so hot.
Yeah, well, they're more capable than they appear, obviously. But they were funny, I thought. They were funny – calling White Queen a tart.
The shot of her mouth hanging open is delightful.
Yeah. I thought this was really amusing and fun, and I really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that coasted along past things like Apocalypse sitting at the dinner table, and I could have sworn Gateway was dead 20 years ago, and, you know, so.
You've missed a lot. I can't even – if I was to explain to you what is going on with the X-Men now, we would – that would be the end for the show. This might be the biggest leap you've made was to the X-Men.
Oh, yeah. Confirmed.
If you had read the other issues, your head might have exploded, because that was really deep into what was going on.
Yeah.
So Doctor Doom number 3, Josh, I've been really enjoying this miniseries. Christopher Cantwell, Salvador LaRocca. Again, with continuity stuff, this didn't really match up with what's happening. Other books like Spider-Man this week, but this is the story of Doom being framed for destroying a sustainable energy situation on the moon, and now he's on the run. He's got a hoodie on, and he's hipster Doom. And
a lot of cotton.
In this issue, he was sent to, he was sent to hell in the last issue, so this is him battling his way out of hell with Mephisto.
Yes. And a demon who may or may not have been his one true love.
Right. Yeah. I get kind of bored whenever they go to hell in any comic book. I don't know why.
Well, I mean, it probably has something to do with the fact that Mephisto is like the lord of the underworld and arguably one of the most powerful beings in the universe, and everybody we see fight him wins.
Right.
I think they might have kind of overplayed their hand with old Mephisto there.
Death shows up, so then Death outranks Mephisto. You know, I never really understand where Mephisto is on the ladder of satanic beings, but it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter. I do enjoy that. So one of the running gags in this book has been that Kang keeps showing up for one page.
Oh.
He pops in and pops out for one page, and it's been terrific. Here, he shows up at the very end, so it wasn't quite as fun because he didn't get to disappear yet, but it's just been this weird running gag where Kang pops in.
So you're saying that Josh likes a book where Kang pops in?
Yeah, oh yeah, he loves it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I do as well, so it works out great. Yeah. I just, it was a very long fight with Mephisto in hell, and I just didn't. This is my least favorite issue, but I've been enjoying this miniseries.
Yeah. Well, this is both my most and least favorite issue. Speaking of continuity cluster fumbles, I swear to God, I read these things. Like, Marvel, with their app, gives me every book they put out. Mm-hmm. And I make a good faith effort to plow through those bad boys. And I would swear that one day, Brian Bendis was writing Doctor Doom as a changed man.
Yep, he was.
And then the following afternoon, he was eating babies, and I didn't ever get connective tissue for how that happened.
There really isn't one. They've just sort of reset the character. That also annoyed Josh because he really loved that Bendis book. But Doom always had to return to being Doom. That was never going to stick. And as much fun as that book was, he's better as Doom than he is as Iron Man.
I mean, people are chomping at the bit to get him in a movie now.
He's
because
so great.
He's the guy. And in this book, I'm not sure what he's doing, because depending on whether he's having one of his visions or whether he's punching the devil in the face, he's either a savior of mankind or the bearer of the apocalypse.
I mean, he was framed.
Yeah.
They were making something on the moon that was going to either recycle our bad carbon. It was something climate change related, and it got blown up by missiles from Earth, and he was blamed for it, and now he's on the run because he was sanctioned, and because he's technically a world leader.
Mm-hmm.
So to stay off an invasion of his country, he basically abdicated the throne to this woman, Victoria?
Regent Victorious or something Victorious, like that.
Victorious, yes. And so she's basically in charge of Latveria. He's on the run in Queens with his hoodie, eating burritos with Morgan Le Fay.
And Morgan Le Fay has an apartment for some...
Hey, you never know.
Speaking it's of good, somebody I lost
City
track
real
of.
Estate. Yeah. It's important to hold on to. And so he's on the run for a crime he didn't commit. He's like a one-man A-team. So he may have done bad things in the past, but in this particular instance, he did not commit the crime, but no one else is believing him. So that's the thrust of this book. And it's been a lot of fun. Let's talk about New Year's Evil, technically number one, I guess. But for this year, this is the anthology DC put out to celebrate Christmas and New Year's through the lens of villains, because we don't have enough books starring villains.
Right.
This was a 80-plus page giant. I was a little shocked it wasn't the patron pick, because the patrons love to drop 80-page giants on us at Thursday night before we record.
They're strategic picks, are they?
But I was going to read this anyway. I was going to read this anyway because it kicks off with a Gabriel Harbin, Karina Becko, Joker story. He doesn't draw a lot of these kind of books, so that was really exciting. There's also Kurt Busiek, Dale Eaglesham, Prankster story. Those to me were the two highlights. So there's a couple other ones I enjoyed. As any anthology, some of these were good, some of them were bad, some of them are boring.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed The Amateur, which kicks off the Joker story, in which a guy stages a fake Joker attack and takes credit for it, and the Joker finds out and gets real pissed that someone's basically stealing his act. It was a gorgeous looking little story.
I really enjoyed their dialogue. I really enjoyed the resolution. That Steve was very easy for the Joker to find.
Well, you know, it's a short story. You gotta jump over something.
Five pages, I guess. Yeah. But other than that, yeah, I agree. I can't remember the last time I saw Gabriel Hardman draw something that wasn't his creation. You know, so that was nice to see him visit the old neighborhood.
He is a film storyboard artist who's done all of the Nolan Batman films. So he has done work we have not seen featuring Batman and Joker, so this it was nice to see. You know, whenever anyone asks, who would you like to draw a Batman book? I always say Hardman, even though he would never do it because he only does his own work.
Yeah.
He draws a really great Batman.
Yeah.
It's a very classic Joker.
Absolutely. Was there any contrast? Was there anyone you wish you had skipped?
Well, I don't want to jump them, because I don't know some of these names. I don't know how green they are. There was a couple of stories that didn't have professional level art for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed the Toy Man story. The Raymond Villalobos art was very clearly Frank Quitely inspired.
Yeah.
I liked the story of basically Toy Man trying to get kids these days to play with toys instead of looking at their phones.
Right. And
I felt a little too uncomfortably close to Toy Man.
I'm on the wrong side of this one. Yeah.
His toys were all inspired by 90s DC. That was funny. So all the toys were from 1996-7 versions of these characters. That was cool.
Talking in extreme catchphrases. And
I liked the Sinestro one. I thought the art was really good from Sumit Kumar. I thought that was really strong.
Oh, yeah.
That was surprisingly really good.
I really like the story about that one.
Yes, yes.
You know.
I don't know. I've never heard of Philip Kennedy Johnson, but it's a really strong short story about Sinestro returning to one of his old planets that he used to oversee as a Green Lantern to find that they've worshipped him for all the wrong reasons. That was a fun story. Poison Ivy
disemboweled that guy.
Yeah, she did. That was fine. It was all right. I didn't like the Ares story. I sort of got bored of that and skipped.
That seemed tailor-made for people like me who mostly interact with Wonder Woman as a movie character.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know how often Ares comes into play.
Captain Black Adam. That's not his name. Black Adam. I ended up sort of skimming. I was like, oh, I didn't really like this. So I skimmed it. Then we had Calendar Man. Wasn't really a big fan of that one.
Mm. It was nice to see Christos Gage again.
Sure, but he's around. I just didn't really like that one.
Yeah.
Kronos. I liked that one, actually. That was a really dark one about Kronos trying to make his father into a better man in the past, and that just not working out. That was actually really good.
Yeah, he was the one character featured who I had literally never heard of before, and I was emotionally invested right away.
Yeah, it was really well written.
Yeah, if I had a time machine, I would only do things like that, so I related to him very much.
And then Prankster by Kurt Busiek and Dale Eaglesham was fun, where Prankster is like the worst boss ever. And then we ended with a Harley Quinn story, which was all right. Harley Quinn attempts to make Renee Montoya's holiday a little brighter. I just don't like villains as buddies of the heroes for the most part. There's always a couple of exceptions, but Harley Quinn becoming a hero character because she's really popular is one of the worst things that has happened to comics, for my opinion.
Yeah.
She was such a great villain character, and people responded to her, and then it's like, well, people like her, let's make her a hero. And it's like, that's bad.
I think Harley Quinn has replaced Deadpool as the character whose whole deal I simply do not get. Because, you know, she's a villain, she's a pinup, she's, you know, friends with, I don't know.
Well, let's take a quick break and talk about Daybreak, the only podcast left. Whether you're a fan of the show Daybreak or you just love learning how to survive in a teen-filled post-apocalyptic world, you're going to need to subscribe to this new Netflix podcast. It's called The Only Podcast Left, and it's Netflix's first fictional one. It's set in the world of Daybreak, written by showrunner Aaron Colleet, and starring Tessa Netting, Kyle Sherman, Kimia Bepornia, and Jared Goldstein. And meet your hosts. They're the AV Club. They're a group of kids who survived the apocalypse by using their skills to rig cameras and spy on warring tribes all over Glendale. Now they're making a show about it while juggling their own personal drama and trying to stay alive as mutant pugs, ghoulies, and a mysterious new tribe all try to kill their vibe. Meet members of the LARP Lords, the Donut Hoes, the Stem Punks, and more in their Tribe Spotlight segment. Jim, if you had to join one of these tribes, who would you join? Keeping in mind, I've already claimed the donut hose for myself.
Oh, that's too bad. I'll be a LARP Lord.
Okay. I could see you in a LARP Lord outfit.
I cast Magic Missile.
There you go.
No doubt about it.
This podcast is full of spoilers, so make sure you watch the whole show on Netflix before pressing play on the podcast. You might just find out what happens after the end of Daybreak Season 1. So it's like Season 1.5. Featuring Daybreak cast member Austin Kroot in a special guest appearance as Wesley Fists of Fury. The Only Podcast Left is available now on Spotify. I can see you in like a hood, a robe.
Yeah, I would want to do the pointy hat with stars on it.
Oh, okay.
Sorcerer's Apprentice kind of thing. Only if I could grow out my beard.
I'm with the donut host purely for the food.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
If you hadn't claimed it first, let's not kid ourselves.
I've already mapped out our yearly donut. Like, we're good. We're in apple cider donut time now.
I appreciate your diligence in this.
So check out The Only Podcast Left now on Spotify. Let's talk about the Green Lantern Black Stars book real quickly. This is issue 2 of 3 of this miniseries. Josh and I both didn't like the first issue. It was a little obtuse. I wanted to mention this solely because if you wanted to know what Grant Morrison thinks about what's going on currently in DC Comics, you should read this issue because it is one long, not-so-veiled commentary on DC at the moment. And I was pretty shocked. This issue, the Black Stars are thinking about going to Earth and destroying it, and Hal, even though he's undercover with the Black Stars and ostensibly a bad guy here, is trying to tell them all the things about Earth and why it shouldn't be destroyed and why the heroes shouldn't be messed with. And it's just, we get yet another attempt to break Batman, the bat signal broken, and Batman going, not again. This is almost like a Mad Magazine article.
I was going to say, it's nice to know that they'll either poke fun at themselves or not pay very close attention to what Grant Morrison is doing.
Right.
One or the other.
And they're all too afraid of him to say anything.
Right.
He might cast a spell on them, but there's a whole thing about never-ending crises and people protesting in front of the Hall of Justice with signs. No more crisis. Crises are infinite. And then there's a bit, this was the most pointed one, with the Depressoverse Doppel Zombies, which is totally a shot at the Batman Who Laughs and the whole situation with Justice League right now about all these evil versions of the heroes running around. I was just shocked that this was out there in the world.
So is that a recovery from issue 1?
Well, it made more sense.
Hal's
whole plan was to start a war, so he basically convinces Jonathan Kent to join the Dark Stars, which doesn't make any sense because Jonathan Kent is in the future with the Legion of Superheroes, but doesn't really matter. Much like other books we've talked about, this book is basically out of continuity as well. But the funny bit was Hal, basically, he was in the Justice League when the New 52 launched. He was quickly removed in favor of Jessica Cruz and the other guy's name I always forget. And so here he's like, I haven't been on this team in years. What the hell's going on?
It
felt very much like Grant Morrison going, what are you guys doing?
Didn't he write Infinite Crisis? Do I remember that correctly?
Infinite Crisis was Geoff Johns.
I'm very out of the game.
He wrote Final Crisis.
Oh, okay. There we
That's
go.
That's okay. Those things both happened a long time ago, so fine. Old Man Quill is the final issue to this miniseries that Josh and I have both been loving. I came on it late. Josh convinced me to do it. First of all, terrific cover with Galactus. Really eye-catching. And here we get the wrap-up of the story in which Peter Quill finds a way to save the day, and I am totally fine if Ethan Sachs wants to do more of these because he did Old Hawkeye, which was great. This was really great. If he wants to wrap this up with like a trilogy and do a third one, that's fine by me because this was terrific.
I've really enjoyed the first 4 issues, and which is saying something, because I had to overcome a lot of, why is this a thing we're doing now? Right. Why are we doing all the old men? Why are we doing this? But yeah, it hooked me right away, and I'm sorry to see it go.
What's funny about this issue is Josh and I just did the Booksplode about the old Fantastic Four books, and we were talking in that show about the relative size of Galactus, and his first appearance in the Fantastic Four basically come up to his mid-thigh, so he's really only like, you know, 20 feet tall or something like that. And here, you know, Peter Quill's the size of his face.
Yeah, I was introduced to him during the original Secret Wars as a boy, and I've always thought of him as about the size of like the Empire State Building or something.
Yeah.
When he started out, he was just standing on the Empire State Building. He's had too many planets.
This was really fun. I thought the way that they wrapped it up was inventive. The way Peter Quill saves the day was inventive. The use of the Infinity Stones was inventive and fun. And like I said, it ends with a place where obviously the story's not wrapped up. The world still lives. That there's still characters out there. In fact, at the end, he forms a new Guardians of the Galaxy team with some Misfit members. And let's do it. Let's do another one. Ethan Sachs is terrific.
It's not up to me, but I'll make some phone calls.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
You wanted to talk about Kill Whitey Donovan, number one.
Yes. While you were hoping that I was going to bring my Marvel Zombie energy back to the
surprised.
Show,
yeah.
I was trying very hard to appear well-rounded and sophisticated. So I picked this book blind. It's Kill Whitey Donovan by Sidney Duncan with art by Natalie Barahona. I happen to be reading a book right now called The War Before the War, which is about the runaway slave problem between the Revolutionary War and the start of the Civil War. So I'm in a very
interesting
kind of Civil War state of mind.
Mm-hmm.
The book takes place during that time. The premise is that
the war is happening.
Yes, I believe that this is mid-war.
The woman's husband or whoever that is often fighting the war.
Yeah, the idea is that the main character's sister was abused either emotionally or physically or whatever by this guy, Whitey Donovan. And he went off to fight the war, and she got so despondent she killed herself. So the main character decides that her suicide is Whitey Donovan's fault, and she vows to track him down wherever he is and put a bullet in him.
Well, she originally hoped the war would get him.
Yes, that's right.
And that would be
fun
revenge, but he somehow survived. So this is getting towards the end of the Civil War, and he has survived. Yeah. And so she's got to go kill him.
Yes. And crucial to her plan is enlisting one of her, I guess, father's slaves who is looking to run away. And what better way to run away than doing it with your master, I guess. So,
well, that's their cover. So they've been friends since, you know.
Yes.
It's horrible just to say the words out loud, but they've been friends since she came onto the plantation, since she was bought. They were both little girls. Mm-hmm. And so they've known each other growing up. And their plan is no one's going to bother a woman traveling with her slave. No one's going to suspect her having run away, because this is during a time when that was, you know, rampant thing that was happening. So that's their plan. It doesn't quite go that way. I thought this was really well written. I thought the art was hit and miss. I thought some pages were terrific and some panels were really terrific, and other pages and panels were a little not there yet. Natalie Barahona is clearly new, but she's got talent, so it'll be interesting to see where she goes. And there's a couple of really great sequences in here. A little inconsistent, so that's something to work on. But I thought this was really fun, and I'm glad you picked it, because I wasn't even going to look for it. This is a Dark Horse comic.
Yes, it is. It caught my eye at a time where I'm feeling a little overwhelmed by books, and I'm loath to pick up new ones, but I'm glad I tried this one. I will see where it takes us. It might take me a little while to get around to it again.
I was really shocked, and this is a 5-issue miniseries, in case anyone's interested. Great cover by Jason Pearson. That there wasn't some sort of supernatural element. I just assume now that, like, it's set in 1864, but there's going to be aliens.
Yeah.
And then we're going to talk about another book like that in a few minutes. I was really sort of shocked that it was like, oh, this is just set Civil War, and there's no vampires. They're not running from
book?
Monsters.
The sixth gun?
The sixth gun.
Yeah. Probably because of the art and the setting, it started to remind me of that a little bit. But you're right. You guys have been so poisoned. You think everything's going to have a demon in it or something. And
you know, there's not a huge audience for Civil War era comics. Josh and I are. Clearly are, but the three of us alone can't prop these books up.
And we were
surprised that Rebels made it as long as it did.
Yeah.
I was happy to read this, and I'm glad you picked it. That last panel is really terrific. The last sequence is great. This is a nice little gem that you uncovered this week, and I was glad you did.
I have to make up for the fact that I can't describe the books to save my life. Can everybody tell that Connor does this 10 times a week, and I've done it once in 6 years?
Let's talk about Thor the Worthy, number one, which at first both Josh and I were like, wait, did they put the new Thor book out before they finished the miniseries? But this is one of those 80 years of Marvel one-shot issues that sort of looks at the history of the character. This features three stories. The first is a Beta Ray Bill story, which was, to me, the big draw, which was written by Walter Simonson, drawn by Mike Hawthorne, inks by Sal Buscema, and letters by John Workman, colors by Tamara Bonvillain. But Simonson, Buscema, and Workman are all old-school Marvel legends.
That was the main reason it caught my eye, because, you know, if you got Simonson Thor, you'd pick it up.
Yeah, and that story was terrific. It was Sif and Beta Ray Bill fighting an old troll in Asgard, and then a very casual... Right. Odin at the end. Like,
what did they do to Odin while I was away? My God.
I have not seen this. I mean, this is probably an old version of Odin.
He looks like Ken Casey's Merry Pranksters over here. What's going on?
He has a big floppy hat on.
Yeah.
This is like retired in Palm Springs Odin.
Mm-hmm.
But it was great. This was a great story. Mike Hawthorne art was terrific. The Buscema inks were strong. And then the middle story was, it was a Thunderstrike story written by Tom DeFalco, drawn by Ron Frenz, two classic Marvel guys. If you excise my brain, you'd find the bit that knows anything about Thunderstrike. Like, that right. part is, I don't know anything about Thunderstrike.
That was my decade off.
I think he happened in like a period where I wasn't reading Thor. Like, I definitely was reading comics when he was around. I think he was late 80s, early 90s. But I don't know anything about this guy. He's got a beard and a douchey ponytail. And
I think he's in or was in the Guardians of the Galaxy book that I'm reading back in my time. When I saw Tom DeFalco and Ron Frenz in the credits, I laughed out loud because they were most famously, the last time I saw them, on the Spider-Girl book that would never die. You remember that one?
Yeah.
Like 50 people were reading it, but they would go to the mattresses and like kick you down a flight of stairs to keep it from getting canceled. So they were also, I think, at least at one point, they were the Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man team when I was little.
Oh, Ron Frenz drew tons of stuff, including Thor. Yeah. He's really good, and he's still got it.
Yeah. No doubt about that.
I just don't know anything about Thunderstrike. I don't really care. I read this and I was like, yeah, okay, fine.
All like the cops or whatever are talking to each other like you're supposed to know who they are. They have names like Zoomer and things like that. And I was like, this was plucked directly from like 1989.
And 100, great. Like, I'm sure old school Thunderstrike fans are thrilled. And I'm not bashing it.
It scratched an itch.
There's a black hole in my Thor history and includes the portion in which Thunderstrike was a thing. So I don't know anything about it. The final story was Rule of Reflection by Catherine Eminen and Tom Riley. And this was again, Sif. Strange, Sif was in two of the three. Sif and then Jane Thor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Again, fighting trolls. So it's kind of bookended that. It was fine. It was good.
Yeah. Speaking of running to catch up, there's something about Catherine Eminen's writing. It's very much like, I don't know anybody who talks this way and I'm having trouble understanding you. Like, I always have to get into her groove for a page or two before I'm on board.
To me, the most interesting thing about this book and worth mentioning is that she gets a magical mirror that this troll has, and it's supposed to show everyone who is worthy. Like, everyone who has been worthy in the past, who's picked up the hammer, and the whole conceit is eventually she sees herself because she's not sure if she's worthy.
Mm.
So we see Beta Ray Bill. We see Captain America. We see, I guess that's regular Thor. We see the blockheaded guy. I don't know who that is. We see Frog Thor. And then we see Superman and Wonder Woman, which I was really surprised.
Yeah.
I mean, they have done that. One of them is from DC versus Marvel. I believe that's Wonder Woman. And then one of them is from Justice League versus Avengers. And so they show everyone who's wielded the hammer, and that includes two DC characters. So I was really surprised to see that.
Editor's note, it counts.
Especially since they all hate each other.
Well, so, I can't do anything about that.
So those were some of the books. There was a lot of books. It was a heavy week. There was a lot of stuff to read, a lot of stuff to choose from. But those are some of the books we enjoyed this week. But over at patreon.com/ifanboy, patrons of the show, anyone who's a patron can vote to add a book to the rundown. This week, patrons get about 48 hours to vote. We could have called the voting within the first 30 minutes. The winner of this vote had a commanding lead from the start, and nothing even came within the realm of passing. The Butcher of Paris, number one from Dark Horse, written by Stephanie Phillips, art by Dean Kotz, colors by Jason Wordy, and letters by Troy Piteri, who I've never seen before, but I typed his name into the script about five times. This is a true story. It's a crime book. Yeah. There's no vampires. There are no aliens. There are no magical creatures.
You have got PTSD about this.
They just very rarely do straight crime stories these days outside of Ed Brubaker's stuff at Image. This is a story, a very interesting story. During the time of German occupation, during World War II, there was a serial killer in Paris who killed anywhere from 60 to 200 people that they're not actually sure. And this is the story of that. And it's a miniseries.
Yeah.
I liked it. There was some problems with the art, but overall, I mean, this is like right in my wheelhouse. So I enjoyed it, even if it wasn't not perfect, but it was very enjoyable, I thought.
Yeah, I agree. I only had really a couple of notes, which is it had a recap page on the first page of issue number one. And if you read the paragraph that was on that page, you knew what was on the last page. And right. I really, really wish I had not done that, because it would have been a lot more captivating and a lot more shocking. And it really would have hooked me if I didn't know before I'd ever looked at one panel exactly what the book was about.
Right.
Which is a shame. The only other thing is that they do the thing that people sometimes do when they're writing foreign language speakers or non-English speakers, whatever, where they're all French.
Right.
They're presumably talking in French, but all of the balloons are written in English. And then every once in a while, they'll kind of like drop in a French word or something. And it pulls me out a bit.
I understand.
It's a quibble.
Trying to make it so you know they're speaking the French by using common French words that most people know, like s'il vous plaît and oui and non.
They just...
To me, it was more things like page 5 on your digital reader, if you're looking at it that way. There's two Nazis who look exactly the same.
And
the same hair color, the same face. So, like, in that, I didn't know who was who. There was things like that.
Yeah.
I don't want to say amateur stuff. It's not amateur stuff. So when the Nazis show up later on, like, wait, which Nazi guy is this? Is it that guy or is it the other guy? And it wasn't a huge deal because ultimately they're all kind of interchangeable monsters. So it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. And luckily the main character is retired Vladimir Lenin or something.
Right.
That made it easier.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. I don't know anything about this. It gave me very much vibes of Devil in the White City.
Mm-hmm.
Did you read that? I think you might have read that.
I have, yeah.
The Eric Larson nonfiction book.
Yeah.
Not that Eric Larson. About H.H. Holmes, the serial killer during World's Fair of Chicago, using that as a cover for to find victims, which is what the serial killer here does. And it was quite brutal. And I don't know anything about the story, so it's going to be really fun to read, I think.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see now that the thesis of the book has been spoiled for me a little bit. It'll be nice to see them move on to how they catch this person.
Well, that's
person.
Interesting and because... And we talked about spoilers. I don't want to spoil this too badly, but it didn't go the way I thought it would.
Yeah.
Okay, I have to say it. He's found out in the first issue. And so
the
story isn't about uncovering the serial killer or discovering the serial killer. I guess the story is about catching him. Again, I don't know the story, so maybe it's very exciting. But I didn't expect them to basically discover the lair and all the bodies in the first issue, which was an interesting choice and quite gruesome final page.
Mm-hmm. He sounds like a real meanie.
Since Stephanie Phillips, the writer, she has a little essay in the back, talks about how she stumbled upon this story and has been obsessed with it, and it's been driving her crazy, and, you know, the best way to exercise those demons is to get it out there.
Get it on the page.
The Butcher of Paris, number one, patron pick, ratings out of 5 stars. I'm going to give it, I'm wavering between a 3 and a 3.5. I feel like 3 is too low, but it's definitely not a 4.
How granular do you get?
Well, as granular as you want.
Yeah.
I'm going to go 3.5.
I think you're right about that. I don't have any real quibbles with it, and I'm interested to see what happens next.
And it's a true story, and that's interesting, and it's a story that I would assume a lot of people don't know about, so that's also interesting. I was really happy that they picked this book, because I was expecting it to be the New Year's special. I probably wouldn't have read it, so I'm glad that was the pick. 2 just regular books this week.
Yeah.
No genre superpowers or anything. It's great. Another break. Let's talk about the holidays, Jim. It's holiday time. We're coming up on that time. I'm sure you're deep in your shopping period or getting ready to or thinking about it or maybe putting it off.
We're pretty ruthless in our house. We're just about done.
The question is, what guy in your life are you shopping for this year? Maybe you're shopping for your dad or your brother, or your uncle, or your boyfriend, or your sister's boyfriend or someone. And really, how many pairs of socks, how many wallets, how many ties can you give the guy in your life?
Right.
Those can all be great presents, but really, they're sort of the cliche guy. I don't really know that well.
Yeah.
Present to give someone. I've had to do it.
Absolutely.
We've all had to do it. Maybe you should think about some shaving products. There's a Harry's gift pack that's both thoughtful and practical. They will use this every day, and they'll be thinking about you every day as they use it. It's kind of the perfect gift. So listeners of our show can get $5 off any Harry's shave set by heading to harrys.com/ifanboy. Free shipping on those products ends on December 16th, so you want to act now. You got about a week. If you go to harrys.com/ifanboy, you get $5 off the set, and you get free shipping. And that's a really great deal if you're looking for a great product for the man in your life. It's a practical gift you'll actually use. Harry's makes sharp blades that last. They're German-engineered and award-winning. They're backed by 100% quality guarantee. So if he doesn't love that shaving set, you get a full refund, which is great. That's a great deal for you and for him. Holiday sets start at just $20. That's within your Secret Santa limit.
Yeah.
My family, we do that. We've got a limit. That's definitely within that limit. And Harry's Blade refills are as low as $2 each. Your guy in your life will save money over time. He'll thank you for that. It comes in a ready-to-gift and a handsome holiday gift box. I've seen the photos of it. It's nice. It's colorful. It looks very holiday appropriate.
Yeah.
Your gift gives back. 1% of each sale will be donated to charitable organizations, so you can get a nice gift and feel good about it. Here's a special offer for fans of our show. We've partnered with Harry's to give you $5 off any shave set. You don't even have to get the holiday set, although I do encourage you to do so. You can get any set, $5 off. That includes limited edition holiday sets. And when you go to harrys.com/iFanboy, you get free shipping until December 16th. Each shaving set includes a weighted handle with option to engrave. I did that for my brother one year. I think I've given all the men in my life that Harry's shaving set. It's a great gift. I definitely got an engraved one for my brother. You get a 5-blade razor cartridges. You get the foaming shave gel with a rich lather, the travel cover to protect your blades and your fingers from when you reach into your travel bags. Packaged in a handsome holiday gift box. And free shipping ends on December 16th. So act right now. Go to harrys.com/iFanboy. That's harrys.com/iFanboy. And if you've been listening to the show over the years, as we've talked about Harry's a lot, and you've been at all curious, This seems like the perfect opportunity. You get the free shipping. You get the $5 off. You get a nice gift. You don't have to worry about it. It almost comes pre-wrapped. It's not wrapped, but you just throw some paper on it, and you're all set to go. So check it out, harrys.com/iFanboy.
Somebody tell my kids to buy this for me.
So you should buy it for yourself.
We have a problem that's tearing our family apart. My kids love the fact that I have a beard, and it is like the most pathetic beard in the entire patchy world. I would love to cut it off, but they would disown me. But maybe this will be the first step. Maybe they're desperate enough to get me a gift that they'll think of Harry's.
Maybe they won't disown you if it's shaved with a gift they give you.
Brilliant. This is why I come here.
So now this is the most exciting part of the show, in which a new person gets to jump into the deep end with the patron powers. Every week we give powers to our patrons who give at the $5 or higher level over at patreon.com/iFanboy. We're getting close to the end. I just checked the spreadsheet a little while ago. We're not too far from getting everybody done. And as I said before, if we've missed you, if you've upgraded in the middle, we will make sure to get you at the end of this whole nonsense. So let's give out our superpowers as a way of thanks at the end of the year. Eric Smith's power is that he hears complicated jargon in plain English.
Oh, what I wouldn't give for that power.
So if he's in a meeting at a physical therapy session and the doctor starts talking to you in real complicated medical jargon, he gets the translation in his head of what they're actually saying in regular human words.
I can't tell you how many times I've gone to meetings. I've worked where I work for years now, and there are still acronyms that I can't admit that I don't know what they mean. We are 7 years too late for me to go. And what's PMT again? Like, I would just have to pack my desk. So this would be my wingman 100% of the way.
There you go. Eric cuts through the nonsense.
That's right. Now, in speaking of cutting through the nonsense, Jonathan Shearer's power is that he automatically corrects the ceiling fan in any room. You know, in the summer, they're supposed to go clockwise for 6 months. They're supposed to go counterclockwise for 6 months.
What?
One of them cools the room. One of them draws the cold air out of the room.
What?
I can't remember.
Did you make this up?
No. You can. There's a switch on your fan that controls which direction it goes, because half the year it blows up and half the year it blows down.
You could be making this up and I would believe you. I grew up in my apartment in New York, ceiling fans. I don't have them now, but I don't remember that ever being a thing.
Once every 6 months, I stare up at my ceiling and go, is it going the right way now? Did I forget to change it last time? And I might as well just have it be the homepage on my browser when I start up the thing, because I never can remember.
So when he walks in a room, it corrects itself?
Yeah. It's the most limited telekinesis of all time.
Jared Leister? I apologize for the pronunciation. Leister? We'll go with that. Jared has facial Shazam.
Oh, really?
Not for real life, only for things happening in media.
So he knows who that guy is.
Yeah, let's say he's watching a documentary. Let's just pick a random one. Mike Wallace is here on Hulu. It's terrific. But it features a lot of talking heads that they don't identify till the very end. He doesn't spend half the time like I am going, who's this person? Jared knows if he sees someone on a screen, he has facial Shazam. He knows who it is.
Does he know their name, or does he know who they are? Like what they do, why they're in this.
He gets the whole little like biographical download.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That would be handy.
Yeah. But again, not face-to-face or in person, but only through media.
He will be of no use to you at a cocktail party whatsoever.
No.
Yeah. That's too bad. Well, you take what you can get, I guess. Yeah. Jay Sternitsky has telepathy, but only with the sandwich artists at Subway. He does not.
So they know what he wants.
Yes. He has a very specific sandwich order. Very hard to explain. Not his problem. They know that he wants spinach instead of lettuce. They know he wants light salt and pepper, regular mayo.
So he's like a regular no matter where he...
That's exactly
which
right.
Subway he goes in. He's like treated like Norm.
That's exactly right. They make it just the way he wants it. He doesn't have to go through the rigmarole. He goes directly to the express pickup. He's got a good life if you like eating whatever chemicals are in that bread.
So those are the patron powers. Patreon.com/iFanboy. Thank you, everyone who was a patron this year, everyone who joined up. We enjoy doing this segment. We will be getting, hopefully, through the whole list by the beginning of next year. And everyone will have their powers. We don't like anyone to have to wait too long, but we do thank everyone who has done so. Now, let's do one question. This is a nice end-of-the-year wrap-up question. It comes from Jason R. from Colorado Springs, Colorado. And he says, in celebration of the past year, who would you say is the best writer of 2019, the best artist of 2019, the breakout talent of 2019? I've been thinking about this question since you last did a comprehensive year in comics review segment in December of 2014. It'd be great if you wanted to bring it back. Jim, I always really liked doing those year-end articles on the website. That was always one of my favorite things we did, was where for the last month or so, we just basically did a ton of best of lists. And it was always fun to see what everyone thought, because we always mix up who got what and everyone's tastes are different. And that was always one of my favorite things that we did throughout the year. And I always liked that doing that.
The lane I claimed was my favorite iFanboy posts by other people that year, right, which was always like a Ouroboros snake eating its own tail iFanboy celebration of iFanboy.
Hey, it's a year in celebration.
Yeah. You guys always had the hard work. You had to like crown the king of art every year.
Well, not always us. Sometimes other people did it. But let's answer his questions. I know you are 6 months behind, but that's still 2019.
Poor Jason. Wanted Josh so bad.
Well, here's the thing. I asked Josh. Man. I reached out to him while he was in the car with no doors. I said, hey, Josh, who are your best writer, artist, and breakout talent of 2019, and he sent back to me through chattering teeth, his writer is Mark Russell, his artist is Steve Lieber, and his breakout talent is Nick Darrington, who we discussed earlier on the show. Mine would be, my best writer would be Bendis and his many DC books this year. My best artist would be, I'm going to take Nick Darrington, who drew Batman Universe. He was my favorite artist of the year. And my breakout talent was Jorge Fornes, who started off as just a random guy on Twitter posting his spec art to drawing DC's biggest book in the space of 1 year. So to me, that's the breakout talent of 2019. Even if he may have done some in 2018, I don't remember exactly when he started, but he's the biggest breakout talent of recent years, I think. Jim, any thoughts from earlier in the year?
Right. Here in May, I'm really impressed with what Al Ewing has been doing so far. The Ewing doing Immortal Hulk, just when you think you've read every possible Hulk story that has ever existed, somebody finds a new angle on it, and I appreciated that. In terms of art, I'm having a whirlwind romance with Ryan Stegman right now.
All right.
He scratches my itch. He's terrific. The right balance of, iconic and whatever the other Scott McCloud word is. And I don't know, breakout talent, I don't know if my answer actually qualifies.
Well, it could be someone you've discovered this year that not necessarily new talent, but someone who you didn't really know much about.
I didn't appreciate Ta-Nehisi Coates' first run on Black Panther, but right now I'm reading Black Panther in Space, and I really like it quite a lot. I've clicked with it finally, and I think he's really stepped up his game.
Well, there you go. If you want to get in on the conversation, go to ifanboy.com. There'll be a post for the show, and you can tell us in the comments who your best writer, your best artist, and your breakout talent of 2019 are. That'll be fun to see what everyone thinks.
Oh, man, I'm going to revisit the iFanboy comments section.
Contact at iFanboy.com is where you can write into us, just like Jason did. And we thank everyone who did it throughout the year. We have hundreds of emails we didn't get to do on the show, and we thank everyone who wrote in. Now I'm returning a segment that I didn't do last year, but I was hounded all over the place to bring back the Picks of the Week by the Numbers, which is where I break down the stats on this year's Picks of the Week. And it's not going to be super long because it's boring to read out stats on a show. Just to give people a sense of what a year of iFanboy picks were like, there were 49 total picks this year. Josh did 24, I did 23, and our regular guest host Ryan Haupt had 2. So it was pretty evenly balanced between Josh and I, actually. It was pretty interesting to see. Total by company, this is where it gets interesting. It's a very DC-heavy year, which hasn't happened in a while. And I think that speaks to where Marvel is overall, but we'll see next year. Total picks for DC was 29 out of 49, so 59% of the picks are DC. Marvel had 15 for 30%, Dynamite had 3 for 6%, and Image, in a shocker, had 2 picks this year, 4% of all picks, which if you've been following us for years, that's a pretty shocking number. I think Image is even worse creative place than Marvel is right now.
I can't even think of an Image book.
There's only a couple of must reads, I think, beyond a Criminal and things like that. It's just a very weird place they're in right now.
I have a feeling that people have stopped accusing you guys of bias. Do I have that right?
Who knows?
Because like it used to be you would do this at the end of every year so that you could be like, see? And maybe that's why you stopped last year.
I just think it's boring to read stats on a show, but people apparently disagree. The thing that you see when you look at these stats, you can go back and look on the website. If you search picks of the week by the numbers, you'll find about 5 years worth of these stats, is that it's all cyclical. So 1 year DC is up, 1 year Marvel's down, and it flips and flops, and it all just changes. But if you break it down by person, here's where you really see the change. So Ryan had 1 pick each from DC and Marvel. I had 12 DC picks and 10 Marvel picks and 1 Dynamite pick. So pretty evenly balanced between DC and Marvel. The shocker is Josh had 16 of his 24 picks for DC books. He had 66% of his picks were DC. He had 4 Marvel books for 16%, 2 from Dynamite and Image each for 8% each. And that was how the picks broke down by host. And then if you look by title, we didn't have 1 book that won. Batman Universe and Superman's Pal Jimmy Olsen each had 3 picks. And that was the most by any book. There was a bunch of books that had 2, Conan the Barbarian, Deceased, Event Leviathan, Superman, The Lone Ranger, The War of the Realms, and Superman Up in the Sky each had 2 each. And 15 picks were number 1 books, which is actually pretty low. And then by writer, this was not surprising. Bendis won with 12 out of 49 for 24% of all picks were Bendis books. Jason Aaron came in 2nd with 6 picks. Fraction and King both had 4. Mark Russell had 3. Chip Zdarsky and Tom Taylor each got 2 picks this year. So I was trying to figure out, usually if there's like 1 book picked the most, that is usually like the book of the year.
Yeah.
Since we didn't have that, I decided to crown character of the year, which would be Superman, who had 12 picks that were either starring him or primarily about him. This doesn't even count Doomsday Clock.
Wow. So
24% of all picks were Superman books, which is not surprising if you've been listening to the show, especially the second half of the year. It's been a Superman cornucopia this year. So those are your picks leaked by the numbers. I hope you enjoyed it. It's always interesting to see how the stats break down because we don't really pay attention to what we're doing week to week. We just go forward. We're goldfish. You know, we pick the book in front of us and not worry about what's been picked in the past or what the streaks are or what anything. So it's always interesting to go back and finally actually look at what's happened and see how it's all broken down. And so that's the picks of the week by the numbers. Real quick, it's the end of the year. So if you want to help the show out, keep the show going, there's a couple of ways. FMW.threadless.com, you can buy t-shirts there. FMW.com/support is where you can directly donate via PayPal. And FMW.com/Amazon is where you can find our books, Blowed Books, and also a general shopping link. And we thank everyone who's done any of these things throughout the year. You keep the show going, you keep the lights on. I even skipped over the most important one, Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go help the show out directly and become part of the Patreon family. You get to join in on the Hangouts. We just did one last week. And you get to vote and you get all kinds of fun stuff. So thank you everyone who did any of these things in 2019. You really are the reason why the show keeps going. It's not an inconsiderable amount of time and money that goes into running this thing. So we do thank everyone who helps defray those costs and make the time away from our family and friends worth it. Thank you very much. And let's wrap the show up.
All right.
So out right now, you'll find Books Blowed, Fantastic Four, Behold Galactus, Marvel Select Edition. I mentioned it earlier. That's what Josh and I talked about. The terrific, terrific book. Featuring 3 stories from the different eras of Fantastic Four featuring Galactus. You can find that a couple of shows back on the feed. Normally, you'd get a Talksplode in December. Josh is not here to defend himself. I don't think there's one coming. As in years past, which is not unusual, in January, you'll get a Talksplode and a Booksplode to make up for it.
It's the holidays.
The hardest thing is actually booking people this time of year.
Yeah.
It tends to happen where the December Talksplode slips to January. And as long as it comes out, it's okay. So let's quickly talk about the holiday schedule for the remaining few weeks of the year. As I said before, this is the final Pick of the Week episode of the year. Next week, you'll get the All Media Year in Extravaganza that comes out on December 15th. You'll get a review show for Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker, either the 21st or 22nd, depending on how quickly we can turn it around. And then we'll be back with episode 713 of the Pick of the Week show on January 12th of next year, of 2020. I can't even wrap my mind around that, but that's apparently happening in a few weeks. So as I said, all these shows available at FMO.com. You can find all of our podcasts, all of our past shows. Also, it's all there. You can go find all of Jim's old columns. You can see.
Oh, good Lord.
You can find all the old writing we used to do. We had daily content. Jim used to write a Monday morning column, kick things off, set the tone for the website for the week. It's really interesting to go back and look at those things and see what the pulse of the fandom was at the time and what people
100%.
Were really. It's like a little time capsule.
On Monday morning, I was always like, yeah, what are people mad about this week? I'll write about Spider-Man's marriage, you know, whatever. So like, and then you look at it now and it's like, wow, we cared a lot about that, didn't we?
So if you could go back and look at all, there's literally years of content there. I've been trying to clean it up because we changed servers, a lot of the formatting got messed up. So I've been slowly sort of making my way through some of the old articles and trying to clean up the formatting. So you can check it all over at iFanboy.com. You can also follow us at facebook.com/iFanboy and at iFanboy on Twitter. And a Fanboy Comics on Instagram. That's where you can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. On Instagram, you can see some best of the week in panels. That was an old feature on our website, which we brought back for Instagram. And finally, individually, we are C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram and J.A. Flanagan on Twitter and Instagram and Jimski on Twitter. That's J-I-M-S-K-I. And annoyingly, Jimski on Instagram, but it's J, the number one, M-S-K, and the number one.
Jimski was taken. I had to use ones. And don't be afraid. I recently had to take Twitter private, but don't be afraid to ask to follow me. I'll probably let you. I had a Twitter snitch in real life making things complicated for me. So I had to go underground. But yeah, I'm always happy to get more attention.
I'm off Twitter entirely. Josh has been off it.
Yeah.
So we're more likely to be found on Instagram these days, at least Josh and I. But
yeah,
you can follow the three of us in those aforementioned places. And finally, if you like the show, you can write us a review or leave a star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever it is you get your podcasts these days. I don't know, beam directly into your brain, however it right. goes. But if you leave us a review or star rating, it's a really great way to help us out. If you can't partake in any of the other ways, that's a really easy way to help people find the show. The more ratings and reviews, the better it is for the algorithms to help people find podcasts. And we do thank everyone who does that. And better than that, it's word of mouth. We see it every week. Somebody on social media will recommend us. Someone asks about podcasts, and we see it every week, and we really do appreciate that. The word of mouth is one of the best ways. Personal recommendations is one of the best ways to get people to listen to a show. We do appreciate everyone who has helped spread the iFanboy love in 2019. And you can tell I'm done. right. It's been a long year of talking, and I'm looking forward to the next couple of weeks of not talking much.
Nothing left in the tank.
After the three-hour show we're about to record.
May God have mercy on your soul.
Thank you, Jim. I really do appreciate it. First of all, it's great having you back, but I do appreciate you jumping in the last second when it became clear Josh wasn't going to make it home in time. I know it's not easy reading your comics out of sequence, out of order. I understand how hard it is.
It was something that I've been meaning to do, and you just provided me with the opportunity. Still the best in the biz. I had a fantastic time, and the bad news is I've got a taste for it now again. Yeah, this was great. I hope it's not, 6 years before I talk to everybody again.
Yes, so thank you for coming on, and thanks to everyone who listened this year, and whether you liked it or not, I'm just glad you listened. And until 2020, I'm Connor.
And I am not Josh.
Talk to you next year. Are ringing out for Christmas Day.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.